IVM.
Stories. We've got stories. They're a little bit of funny and a little bit of dissimilar. You want to hear them? It's got humans. They're sitting in a box and talking bold Edward all loud.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Gentlemen and ladies.
And people other than ladies and gentlemen.
And my trans friends.
All your, are they, but they would qualify as one or the other.
But I like to welcome them as my friends.
Hello, him, her and they.
Yes. And it's those times, one of those times where, you know, we say goodbye to you.
Yeah, but not yet. We have an hour to go.
I don't know,
but
I'm getting emotional already.
Already.
Yeah, season 2 is coming to an end.
Yes,
guys.
Welcome to the last episode of season 2. And this is a big season for us because we're going to take a bit of a break after this season.
A big break after all of this.
Yeah, so this is the last time you're going to hear us talk about random shit.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
Today we have a guest who we've been trying to get on this podcast for
since
a while.
Since season 1.
Since season 1. And not to make you feel special, dear guest, but it was scheduling conflicts mainly. Otherwise, we would have heard you earlier.
Yeah, don't hype it.
But we have Tejas Menon in the house.
Sup, hi. Sup, how's it going?
Yes, how's it going?
Thank you so much for having me here. I know it's taken some time to do it. First, I thought it was like, I thought it was a matter of convenience where you were like, oh, Tejas is always floating around IVM studios anyway.
No.
So you just might as well get him in. But then, like, it went on for 2 seasons. Here we are at the end of your second season.
Yeah.
I'm finally here.
Yeah.
I do feel special whether you want me to know or not.
Fact is that low-key, despite both of us having worked with you or known you for a while, we are low-key fangirls, okay?
Yeah, I've never worked with you, so I'm quite not the low-key fangirl, just the regular kind of fan.
But, yeah.
He's
a panty throwing kind of fan girl. I'm not so much.
Yeah, that's true.
But
thank
the first
you.
Time I ever saw you, I remember I was working with Book My Show and covering Mahindra Blues Festival.
Right.
And this bitch of a colleague of mine, she wanted to go and she took on all the reporting part of it. Like this happened at the festival and this happened festival.
Right.
And I was stuck with a camera and I'm just like a noob in the camera business, but I'm still taking photos of whoever I can. And like we were covering most of the gigs and Warren Mendonca, his band was there and I have a massive crush on him. I don't know, I just like he's
Backstreet Blues?
Yeah, Backstreet Blues.
He's awesome, man.
And Warren is just so adorable, like such a cute, you know,
teddy bear of a man.
I really creeped him out once, actually.
Please tell me all these Warren stories.
First my story.
Okay, first your story.
Did you forget the concept of this whole show?
So sorry.
And playing alongside Warren was this very lanky, Malu looking dude.
Yep.
Like with very long flowing hair. But like they gave him a solo and then he went berserk. And I was like, oh my god, this is so much raw talent right now on stage. And good thing about Book My Show back then was we would get all access passes, so we could go and interview all the musicians. And that's when we had a beer together. You have no idea.
You were
lost by the end of the
episode. Yeah, it's possible.
But yeah, we did meet there. And then
you've never told me this. You told me that I think you told me that you must have seen me at the Mahindra Blues. But yeah, I don't think we met. Damn.
Yeah, and then like 2 years later, I was working at IVM. Then Geek Fruit happened.
Then I became your fan, dude.
Shut up.
Come on, man. Dude, like, you exploded. And then I was just like, yo, what's going on? But also, you did us a great service. You were our producer for my show.
Yeah, Geek Fruit, a lot of fun, dude.
Yeah.
Every week, working on ideas.
And like, no, and you're also, you're a fellow nerd. I mean, both of you are. So it's always it's always nice to hang out with brethren.
Definitely.
Brethren.
And we did Geekfoot Live as well, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's actually the first time I met Tejas.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting to me because I used to listen to his music and I used to listen to the podcast. And on the day on stage, I was like, oh my God, these are the same people. I did not know that there are two. I always thought there were two different Tejas Menons. One was just a geek and one was a kick-ass musician. I'm like, oh no, same person.
same person is not great at both. But it's, it's fine. It's all right. It's not a big deal. Thank you.
So how did you creep out Warren Mendonca?
Oh my God. So actually, the thing is, actually, I'm very bad at all these public spaces, right? So I've been to like maybe 4 gigs in the last 5 years because I can't go out. It's just too scary.
You're a comedian though.
Yeah, but only if I'm on stage is it safe.
You're alone on stage.
And also because they're facing me.
That's true.
Yeah. So I do a bit about this also. I can't be on that other side of the stage in the audience. It's too much anxiety.
Yeah, it sucks.
So one of the shows I went to was Tajdar at Anti. Mm. And Anti, every show was like a packed show, you know.
That was a fire hazard, literally. Yeah,
I used to run the comedy there for a year and a half, and I'm aware of the fire possibilities that were there on every show.
And you know what the worst thing is? That the artists would be the first people to die. From the exit, man.
Yeah. For this from the exit.
But that's why, we don't deserve this.
See, that's why we used to give free beers to everyone. So that you could use the fear to... No, you use the beer to light, put out the fire in case, you know, it burns out.
Use the alcohol to put out the fire?
No, you drink the alcohol, then you have to pee anyway.
Oh, like that.
And all the boys step forward and take responsibility.
Oh, so you're saying urinate over the fire.
Well, if you haven't already drunk the beer, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, all right. That was the idea. Anyway, so I went to this gig.
Irrespective of how it would go, if there was a fire in Antisocial, the upper glass mirror thing that they have, like when you walk down the staircase, it would look pretty cool though. I would think, like, even if you're dying, you'd just take a nice Instagram story. The flames and the mirror on top, wow. It's like,
so that place used to get so packed, and I was so anxious. I remember I must have drunk a liter and a half of liquor that night.
My God.
Just to like kind of be okay with being around so many people. And I remember after the gig, and I don't remember this, but I know because it came back to me when I saw the photographs the next day, was that at some point nearing the end of the gig, I blacked out and I hung around until everybody left and they were packing up, and I went up to Tajdar and Warren and just gave them the biggest, longest, most awkward hugs of their lives, I think, where they were just like, okay, can we? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand what you did to my life, man. You better take this love. You've earned every penny of it.
Nice.
Like, that's how I creeped him out. I have a photo with him.
And I'm not saying this from any form of personal experience, but I know that, here's the thing about playing with like Warren or in Black Sabbath Blues. It's like, that is the most humbling thing you can ever do in your life, right? Me playing acoustic guitar and singing for Black Sabbath Blues is like if Skrillex like needed a bass player. It's like the most unnecessary kind of thing that is required on stage, right? But he asked, and I go, why will I say no?
Yeah.
And it's the most humbling thing because, like, in my career, it's like literally my band or my artist name is Tejas. Everything is Tejas. Every day is Tejas, Tejas, Tejas. You're working towards yourself, essentially, every day. And playing with Black Sabbath Blues is that really kind of humbling experience where it's just like nobody gives a fuck about you.
Yeah,
it's all about Warren.
That's great, though.
Yeah, it's really good. No, it's good. So my point is that, he gets a ton of fans. I've seen this, like, second hour, obviously. And firsthand, and you know that people are weird, people are nice, people are strange, people come from like the smallest towns in India all the way just to watch him. So he's had like a myriad of people come up. So you are one special part in a grander scheme.
Yes. Means as when it comes to like, you know, artist meet and greets, you are insignificant.
I would want nothing more than to be somebody Warren forgets.
But like, for you, it's a great moment, right? Like for you, it's like the moment that it's like I've had the amazing opportunity to meet like my idol like 2 years ago, and I've been following her for like maybe 10
years. Who's your idol?
So Scottish singer songwriter named Katie Tunstall.
Oh, okay? Dude, yes, yeah. Okay, right? Yeah.
Nice. So finally met her and stuff, and I just ask myself usually, how would I want somebody
to react to me,
and like how would I want them to behave with me? And so it's like the right amount of adulation, but still keeping it chill.
Yeah.
That's the vibe.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool, man. It's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame myself. If I was sober, I wouldn't have done that, because I have the same policy with whenever I meet someone I admire.
Exactly,
because I've seen kids go,
man.
And it can be a little annoying also sometimes.
You get
where it's coming from, but at the same time, you're like, but chill na yaar.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what level have I reached in life that, you know, there's no level that is high enough for you to warrant that kind of behavior just yet. I think the age of the rock star or whatever is over, right?
It is.
Because of like...
It's the era of the influencer.
Exactly, right? And it's so true because like you see it when you meet like Bollywood like kids, right? And they are, the gap between them and their behavior and their parents is like wild, right? So we just met like earlier this year. It's last year. So we met Harshvardhan for Bhavesh Joshi, and we were super excited about it because we were like, fuck you comedians for going and meeting all the cool Marvel people. We're gonna meet a real true blue Indian superhero. And so we went and met him, and he was like us, man. Chill. He was just like a dude. And I think it's because they just have to be that way on social media. You can't afford to have have a front, you know, you can't be front. Yeah. You can't be fronting on social media. But then immediately after that, we met his dad. And it's like Mr. India, and we're just like, holy shit. And he was just like, huh. And it was so funny because, and Jishnu pointed this out.
He was just like,
Jishnu pointed this out. It was so funny. It's just like, he was looking at us with, because we, Dinka, I just, we were like, shit, man, we really want to meet Anu. We really want to meet AK, he's called in his house and all that stuff. And we was just like, okay, we got to meet him. And so we were just waiting in the, you know, in whatever, his three-story building or somewhere in the wing, somewhere waiting. And finally, Harsh went and got him. And he's like, dad, these guys want to meet you. And he was filming us meet his dad. Because he's like, you know, you're going to be awkward. And he put up these stories and stuff of us being super awkward. But it was so funny because in Anil Kapoor's mind, he could not tell whether he was like flipping between two decisions, whether he's like, oh, these guys have come for work, like film work, which is true. But they're also friends of Harshvardhan. So it was weird because he was like, huh, so thank you for coming. And then he went to his default Indian uncle thing, which is like, so where did you study? And I was just like that. Well, I was like, we're here to film and we're working here. So, but sure, you know, I'll take it.
Where did you study though, Tejas?
Where did I study? I went to many schools. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I studied that. But I studied in Dubai Gem for like 2 years as a kid. Then I went to my main school, which is a school which is no longer, it does not exist anymore in that format. It's been rebranded and relocated in Dubai. Okay, so I tell this to a lot of people just to kind of get out of the way because it's a really stupid thing. People say, hey, where are you from, man? And yeah, my parents are from Kerala. So that makes me a Malayali, but they never grew up there because their parents in the army, etc. So they roamed around a lot. My mother grew up in, I mean, she was born in Pune, but then went all over India. My dad grew up in Pune, but then he was in Chennai or Madras. Then he went all over India again. Mm-hmm. And then in 1977, he moved to the UAE where he was in Dubai. And it's a really interesting story. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, you're from the UAE, oh, Gulfy. But like, to think about it is really unique because the country was like, I think formed in like, 73.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was there in 77.
First generation.
It's a very rare, it's a very rare thing if you think about it that way. Like, literally, they made a country and then we showed up.
Yeah. No, I got to speak a lot to a lot of people who are whose parents were the first generation of Indians to go there, all in the 70s and 80s, and they all have the same kind of story of, do you realize none of this was here?
Yeah, it's so
but
true.
But we were here. It's that kind of vibe. But that's and it's true though. It's only sad that you all don't get citizenship despite having put in the years though.
You know, this is my prediction that I feel like that will not change entirely, but in the next, say, 40, 50 years, they will be forced, their hands will be forced to do that. They've already started giving like property, like, you know, that was one thing you couldn't do. So you can do like what they call a 99-year lease. And now they've started like VAT and stuff. So and it was so funny because like people came and they were just like people freaking out over the internet saying, oh my God, we have VAT
now.
And I was just like, shut the fuck up, man.
So after 40 years when the water levels have risen, everybody will run to the desert and that's when they'll have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, dude, like they need us. I mean, that country was built on rock and roll and whatever. and like on the backs of immigrants, man. Yeah. So to continue your question, and I totally missed this, and I'm a rambler, as you can tell.
We love it.
Yeah.
Keep going. Welcome to the family.
Yeah. So I grew up in Dubai. I was born in India. I was born in Hyderabad. I was there like for like 3 months. Then, as I keep saying, I was Amazon Prime to Dubai. I was there for like I was there for 18 years, and then I left and I came to Pune, where I was like, and you know, I went to a really kind of what people consider to be, if you haven't gone to my school, everybody else who studied in Dubai will say I went to a snobby school.
Right.
Which is partly true because it was really expensive. Not a lot of people could go there. And in the end, even I couldn't afford to go there, but like we just made it happen. And I was there, but it was an excellent school. And so everybody in that school essentially was like kids of like really rich parents.
Yeah.
And so there were tons, and they were Indian parents. Indians who are rich. And so it was this crazy mashup of like overachievers who can afford to go to Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
So everybody did that. I remember this like conversation. I remember like this is the thing that really destroyed me. My brother studied in the States and stuff. And like towards the end of my time in Dubai, my
Your brother's elder?
He is elder.
Okay.
Yeah. He's an elder He was born before Shaman. I was born.
That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah, he was okay. Born. He was born before I was born.
He was delivered before.
He was born about 6 years before I was born.
Okay, yeah. That's not bad. I have a 7 year gap with mine. So that's an interesting.
Yeah,
it's a fun gap to have, actually.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not very fun initially, but I think once both of you cross a certain threshold, then it's really fun.
It's, you know, there's an initiation. It's very much like the Jedi Council where, you know, have you seen that Star Wars Clone Wars episode? It's like, this is not the, this is the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, which was the 2 season run of 5 minute shorts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's one scene in that, which I don't think they repeated in the Clone Wars CGI show, which was that, Anakin walks into, he's just like, Obi-Wan's like, it is time we became brothers or whatever, and all that stuff. And he walks into this like place and he's just like, oh, what's happening? And he walks into this dark room, as a completely dark room, and then all these lightsabers light up and he's in the Jedi Council surrounded by everybody. And basically Yoda has to dub him
Jedi.
Good
night, yeah.
And then like, so I finally figured out what the rat tail is about. Like, so they dub him and when they do that, they whisk it off, which is like insanely cool.
Yeah, it is, it is, it is.
Anyway, so I think there's a very similar thing. This is a stupidly long story for that. So basically, my brother kind of had a very similar kind of acceptance where he's just like, it's time we accept you as a brother, and not like, or like friends basically, and not like, oh, I'm gonna take care of you.
Yeah.
I think that's what happens with older siblings,
because they're initially very like, my brother was freaking out, oh my god, you're drinking, oh my god, you're smoking, this is all wrong things. And I'm like, but you were age when you started it. Like, but don't learn from my mistakes. And then 3 years later he realized I'm not going to. So then
does he still drink and smoke?
Now he's over 30 now, so he's given up.
Okay, cool.
A lot of it. But he's made peace with the fact that I will take my time to reach where he is. I think a lot of it is just that.
What do you think is going to happen to you?
What do I think is going to happen to me? I don't think only beyond foreseeable future.
Fair enough.
My calendar is open till March. I can tell you till there.
Yeah, no, I feel you. That's a good way to do it.
But then Pune was what, Simbi?
So to conclude that story, basically was that, you know, I remember this conversation in the car with, you know, all my friends, and some father of one of my friends was dropping us all home. And he's like, so where are you guys going off to study and all that stuff? Because we were in like 12th grade and I was not applying to anything. I was terrible in school for like academics. It was, I was obviously not cut out for it, or I just didn't really care too much about science. And here, I had the best reason. I went to science because all my friends were in science. Literally, that's it. No other, like, physics.
Worst reason also.
But and I paid the price. Let's put it that way. And so I went. I was in this car, and this uncle's just like, "Oh, where are you guys studying?" And one guy's just like, "Oh, uncle, I'm going to, you know, Rice University." And I was like, "Oh, very good." Then one guy's like, "Oh, Temple. Oh, Columbia. This, that. University of Austin, Texas. All that stuff, right?" And he says, "Oh, so what are you doing?" And I was just like, "I think I'm just gonna like write for a minute." I was just like, "I'm a writer. I'm gonna write." And he was just like, "Oh," and then deathly silence in the car for a bit. And that's precisely what I tried to do. I left Dubai, came to India, and I didn't. So to know a lot about me is to know that I don't really get along. I mean, not don't get along. I have a very strange relationship with my parents, and so they didn't really have a say in what I was gonna. It's not like, hey, you guys, you're gonna. They had no control over it. Plus, my parents are separated, so that also kind of formed a big part of like how I navigated like my relationship with them. But when I came to India, I had like a second wave of parenting. This is a weird thing. It's like I almost have like another set of parents in my cousin and her husband. Who, it's weird. She's like a lot older than me. In fact, she was just her birthday. She just turned like 51 now.
Okay.
So it's a huge gap. And I couldn't stay with my mother. She had left my dad and came to Pune at that point. And when I came back to Pune, I couldn't stay with my mother. I was like, this is a effing recipe for like disaster. I cannot stay with you. And I ended up staying at my cousin's place. And then they kind of like semi like adopted me. And I told them, they were just like, hey, so what are you doing with your life? And I was like, I'm going to be a writer. They were like, shut the fuck up. You're going to go to college. So I was just like, okay, cool. And, you know, I'm super indebted to them. They you know, gave me a home. They you know, their kids, they have two, like, young boys. At least when I came, they were like 10 and like 13 or something. And now they're like, one of them works in Bombay in third culture and stuff. It's like, it's so strange. But so they became like my younger brother. So I've had like both sides of the thing. Like, I've been a younger brother, but I've also been like an older
brother.
So they kind of told me, you know, get yourself to college and do that. So that's how I ended up in Pune. I ended up studying there. I was in Wadia College in economics, which again, this entire sentence is moot just by the virtue of like what college and what degree I was doing. But the important thing is I started working in Pune, and I think that's kind of really what has shaped me into what I do.
Were you playing music since before Pune?
Before Pune,
when did you pick up the guitar, or was that the first instrument you learned?
It is no, it's not actually. Good point. I learned keys a bit in, you know, like, you know, my brother had like a small little Casio guy keyboard, and, you know, I just kept doing like basically what guys do with, you know, in these big bharats and all that stuff. So that's what I was doing as a kid. Naturally, guys. So I did that. And then my mother was just like, hey, do you want to go halfsies on a keyboard? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I bought a keyboard, was playing that. But then I realized very quickly that the keyboard in school, not a cool instrument. Not cool. It's a insanely good instrument. Like, it's the best, in fact, in many ways. But in school, if you can't move around and, like, you can't, like, move around the keyboard and, like, walk around.
And just lugging it around everywhere. Like, when I was learning guitar myself, like, in the church, we used to have these classes on Thursday evenings where all the kids would come with their own instruments.
Yeah.
And the violin and the guitar ones were, like, the snobby ones, obviously, because we could, like, move and pack up and we're done. And these guys are still, like, folding their thing.
Oh, God.
Bro, I played drums for so long. I used to show up with only drumsticks. It's so hard to look cool with drumsticks.
But you know what? And I learned drums, or I mean, I didn't learn it. I became my school drummer at some point. But like, the thing about the drums is like, it's cool. You don't have to carry it anywhere. It's required to have it like in your setup or whatever.
You think that?
Or you had to carry your drums everywhere?
Bro.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bro, have you ever done the college fest circuit here? Like as a participant in the Battle of the Bands?
I have once done it. You know, I feel like I missed a great rite of passage there. Yeah.
I'm in Wilson College doing the festival.
You're in Wilson?
No. I was there for the festival.
Blitzkrieg, right?
Huh?
Blitzkrieg.
What
was that festival?
The Sasta one. Oh, paise kuch naam hai uska. So I'm playing the drums at the back, and we're playing something pretty fast. We're playing some Joker and the Thief at twice the tempo, because at that age you want to play everything fast.
Correct.
And every time I'm hitting the bass drum, like about, you know, somewhere midway through the second verse, I realize that the drum doesn't have two stands on each side, it only has one. So it's like, going away from me, but at an angle. It's turning away from me, and with it the toms are also going away.
That's so good.
During our college festival, we used to have this thing called Iris. And every year we had an annual function where they would...
I performed at Iris. I hope you know that. Yeah, last year.
So who cares? I'm not there anymore. And plus, after we left, the college pretty much went to shit.
That's what everyone says.
Yeah.
I'm the only one who says that I left because it had turned shit.
Okay. So anyways, we had to like go and perform. Like my friends and me, we had formed like a small band where we had two guitarists, two vocalists, and one band drummer.
Nobody wants to have a bassist in college,
man. It's that rock on thing, man.
And like, where do you even ask for one? Like, it's just like, we were just like, kaun karega aajo, like that. Okay. And even on the day of the audition, basically I got caught by TC for traveling in handicap.
Shit.
That's a whole different story altogether. Okay. By the way, okay? Because I got caught in the handicap. They took me to the cop station, and the cops were like, now you have to go to the magistrate in Vasai. Okay. And they take us to Vasai in a different train, and we're coming back because there's no magistrate. We come back in the handicap compartment back to Mahindra. Okay, I missed the audition.
Well,
but we are like, please, can we just like have this in the evening? So they set up the audition in the evening. We all ready. The drummer gets his entire drum kit to the college that day. Okay. So that's why I was like, it's important.
Wait,
for us.
So the college didn't provide a kit?
Yeah, not then. For the rehearsal, that is, we didn't have one.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend Nikhil, he's playing the same guy we went to Uttan with. Anyways, lot of backstories.
Utan? Is it Utan?
It's Utan.
Yeah.
We went to a lake. It's a private resort ourselves.
Nice. Huh.
And so Nikhil and everything, we had rehearsed on the drums with guitar and everything. On the day of the fucking concert, okay, like the annual program, we are all behind rehearsing and everything. And the drum is behind the stage, like the backstage area, okay? And it's on a rug. So the idea is when we do the performance, we put the rug.
Old school.
But whoever constructed the fucking stage never realized that there shouldn't be a bamboo in the middle, dude.
There's a bamboo.
There's an entire bamboo shoot in the middle.
But for what joy?
Just like, everybody was tripping on it. Even the dancers, the host, everybody was tripping on a bamboo.
Just tripping on that bamboo.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
And now we couldn't get the entire drum
that
outside.
Bamboo getting all the kids high.
Yeah, so half an hour before the performance, the drummer has to bail because he can't physically bring his drum set outside. Like, we'll at least put the mic behind
him. Oh, my God. I've done that.
Backing tracks, literally.
I've had to play the drums from the from behind the backstage curtain.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, there's already so much ego issues with the band performance and everything.
No, I was okay with it.
You keep one guy hidden in
literally off stage.
I was okay with that. What I was not okay with is that if there's a curtain and no monitors, you have no idea what's actually being played in front.
Yeah.
This is a Singing in the Rain situation.
So with all the college fest where I played drums, na, like we had a basic game plan. Yeah. Okay, Akash, you know the tempo, you know the song order, okay?
Right.
Just do a count in for before each song and just start. Okay, just start and play it to the best of your tempo ability. We will keep up. That was the only thing I would do.
Yeah.
And there have been so many fuck ups there because people would forget ki solo hai, ki verse hai. I would forget ki either end mein we're doing an outro instead of just, you know, shutting it at this. And it would just fucking be terrible because suddenly the drums have stopped and the rest of the band is just playing and sounding terrible.
Dude, man, college band performance by definition needs to be a fucking mess.
Yeah.
Make a movie on that instead of like Knock On and Gully Boy or whatever. I feel just like that's where the real drama is.
Yeah, but
don't
not
they play
the
some college festival in the first movie?
They play a Navratri night.
Ah,
which also I have done, by the way.
I'm yet to kind of.
Oh, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Thing is, like when we had formed that band, okay, so we were like.
What's the name of your band?
There was no name really.
Come on, guys.
I don't know, Storm Riders.
Okay.
I had a few.
Anyways, so there's one guy, like. I sang decently enough, but the other guy had this Atif syndrome. You know that Atif syndrome where it's like...
not artist syndrome. Atif
Aslam syndrome. So
it's a fucking epidemic, man.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So we were like, you just do like seconds and backing vocals. Now why you want to be like all there? But he was like, nahi main karega. So then like we're meeting at his house.
Yeah.
And the three of us are in this kitchen scheming how to get him out of the band, dude. It's like that's so fucking pitiful.
Wow. Yeah. So sad.
Okay. So coming back to the central narrative of this episode.
Is there one?
Is there one? No, man. It's
I'm hoping to hope.
Multiple universe situation. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
But you were talking about so you picked up the keyboard. Keyboard not that cool.
Keyboard. So I did that, but it gave me a really good foundation. The guitar. I mean, I've said this at many like whatever interviews. People ask me this question, and it was literally just that month you get between prelims and boards.
Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, so instead of studying, I went and walked like from my house to my friend's house, which is deep in Sharjah, and I picked up his acoustic guitar because he's one of those guys who just had one but never played it. And I just ended up like all my friends had acoustic guitars in their house.
Yeah.
None of them played except for one who's obviously.
That's usually how it is around that time of your life also.
And I didn't have an acoustic guitar, and so I was just like, I would always annoy them because I would just go to their houses and keep trying to play and learn something. First song I ever learned, Fade to Black, Metallica.
Oh,
nice.
I don't know how. But I was actually a huge Metallica
Summer
fan.
Summer of 16.
I feel like there are a few songs. Man, I'm telling you, like Zombie.
Better Man
by
Robbie Williams.
No, but
Sound Life, it was amazing. It's really so good. Yeah,
but that's what I've realized is, I know if this ever happened to you, but I covered songs for maybe like 2 years of my journey as somebody who started singing, because earlier too I was playing drums, so
you don't really have.
But after that I couldn't, like once I learned, because I learned a lot of percussion and then I kind of had to take a break because I got injured.
Oh shit. Okay.
I damaged my median nerve.
Man, I have a wrist problem also, which might end my.
Oh man, you gotta be super. Is it carpal tunnel or is it just?
I've gone to 3 doctors, and all 3 of them have given me different diagnoses, and like they all say, it's a matter of time before you either have to maybe not.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
It's a thing, right? Yeah. I don't know if you know Shashwat Bulusu. Do you know Shashwat?
I do. Yeah.
So he had carpal tunnel in the middle. He stopped playing guitar for 6 months.
Oh shit.
Anyway, so I got told no more drums. So then my next strategy was obviously to learn the keys because you can't stop me. You know, well, they could actually. They should have. They really should have because I managed to damage it even worse.
I'm not surprised.
To the point where this hand, these three, my left hand, from middle to pinky, these three fingers are kind of useless.
Oh, Jesus.
So I can't even play bar chords.
Oh, that sucks, man.
But the minute
someone.
You'd be surprised. But
I won't.
But
I don't know how much intricacy required in which one. But go ahead.
But the minute I really got on to playing instruments, I just couldn't find myself covering anything. I would used to always try and make something instead.
It's, you know, I'm telling you, like, I have a very similar thing that a lot of people ask me. And, you know, I get this thing about my music because it's in that fairly. And I was inspired by a couple of these artists, like, you know, whether it's like Jason Mraz or John Mayer, like, or Katie Tunstall. Actually, Katie Tunstall is the person I've ripped off. No, I'm not. But, like, I'm most influenced by her, but, like, nobody will make that connection because it's not as popular.
Not as many people know her.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, for that reason, people see, oh, acoustic guitar. Young dude, and just say, oh, but you're like
John
so and so, or you're Ed Sheeran. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, I get really, not offended, but like I get like really annoyed by that, because like I work really hard on my music and it's like got a lot of complexities that I, the good thing I like about my music is like it's pop music, but it's like there's a lot of complexity under the hood that if you actually had to try and learn it, it's not as simple, and I pride myself on that. But like a lot of people don't get that. And anyway, so to come back to your point is that I think a reason why I have been able to have some kind of uniqueness or identity to my music, and that's why I put it out, is because I just never cared for covers, man. I really did not. And I just couldn't find myself that interested in learning tabs or chords and stuff like that. So I try and work out the song just as an educational thing. But I always ended up, like until very recently, I realized I've been playing like Layla, like wrong my whole life. And I had to play it for this Black Star gig.
Yeah.
Recently, and I was telling Warren, I was like, yeah, cool, and whatever. And he's just like, what are you doing over there? And I was just like, oh, but you know, it has allowed me to kind of expand my own vocabulary. I feel like I'm not the best guitar player by any means. In fact, I don't even consider myself to be a guitar player, but because there's so many people I see who are like Jishnu, you know, Lala, so many people who play the instrument, the act, that's what they do, they're really good at it. I'm just like a medium, because nobody else at that time would play with me, and so I was just like, oh yeah, cool, I gotta do this myself. But because of that, I've been able to kind of identify a specific grammar to my music, which I feel very like close to, and it's like it's very uniquely me, I think. And I think that's been a big part of my musical journey, at least, so to speak.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let's take a small break here, as customary. Yeah. And we'll have Amit's soothing voice coming in for one last time this season.
About now.
And we're back with the second half of Vartha Lab. How's it going, guys? I hope you had a good
question.
Break.
Yeah.
What is a Vartha Lab? Sorry, I'm very uneducated.
Oh, actually,
we are glad you asked.
Yeah,
we explained this first time in the first season, first episode.
So feels fitting now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea was we wanted to do a show around storytelling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Vartha Lab in Hindi is conversation.
Oh, I get it.
But the word, there's more layers to that.
Oh, shit. My brain is exploding. That's good. All right, that's good.
And also, Vartha is means story in Gujarati.
That's what I wanted to know. So cool.
And then we had a lab because we're really interested.
Yeah, the place on
Absolutely
laboratory
dope AF. That
Thank
is
you.
A great name.
And
Thank
our
well
first
done.
Season's poster was a call out to Dexter's Laboratory. If you don't,
yeah.
if you haven't
I've seen
the poster.
Sick. Great. In fact, we wanted to call it something else when we started.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be
super happy, interesting true stories, which
is shits.
Shits.
Oh, I get it.
But
hence we didn't.
Tough call. But I feel like you went with the right one.
Can't market it to iTunes apparently.
If now you can, but earlier you couldn't.
Right.
When they were the devil. Now they're not so much the devil. Yeah. Now they're okay because they let us cuss.
Oh yeah, sure.
Earlier they didn't let you cuss. That was a big problem for us.
Oh, I don't use iTunes podcast.
Nobody does, I feel.
I have an Android.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. We last half we were talking about you picking up the guitar and about moving to Pune, and that's been an interest. And then Pune, I'm back. So this is what 2010s.
2007, November 2007. Yeah, it's my. I think this is my 12th year in India. This will be my 12th year in India. Yeah.
And how long were you in Pune for? Till the end of degree?
So I did my master's also after that.
In Simbi. What?
In media and communication and stuff.
Okay.
I studied like film and advertising and stuff. So big part of my Pune life was literally me being a radio jockey. I was a radio jockey for like 2.5 years. I was, man, honestly, one of the best times of my life. Because like
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, so
94.3.
I was like 19 years old and they gave me a show.
Wow.
And it was like the first English show ever in India and had like a non-primetime like slot. So it was like 9 PM to 1 AM at
night. That's the best.
Which is
slot.
The best, right? So no ads. I can just do whatever I want, say what I want. It was like honestly, and they gave me free tickets for movies. I had to go man, it's one really funny story which keeps coming up is the band, there used to be a band called Something Relevant.
Yeah.
Obviously hugely famous until they disbanded and stuff. And JJ, the drummer of Something Relevant, is my drummer now.
Yeah.
You know, going back.
Oh wait, his full name is too cool.
Jahangir. Jahangir. Noshe Ranji Jahangir, but I mean that just makes it even cooler, I suppose. But anyway, so Jahangir used to be in Something Relevant, and I remember the funniest thing is that he plays for me now, and he was a really senior musician. But Bryan Adams decided to come to Pune, and there was a rockathon, a Bryan Adams rockathon, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was just like, whoever wins this rockathon will get to open for him.
Oh.
And Something Relevant was part of that. And I was the judge.
Oh.
I got to judge JJ, which is like something I do now on a regular basis. But to do it so early in life is a gift that I will never forget. But it was amazing. It was so good because I got to meet all these guys who I would meet later on in life, but like in such a, like,
in a different
now,
capacity.
Yeah, now we're like so close, and it's insane. But it was just really funny. But like, my time in Pune was excellent because, you know, I remember first 6 months religiously went to college, went, learned, made some friends. It was great. And then second year, I only had like a couple of professors who I really, really like. I had one English literature class, which was really good. Anyway, I've been quite fond of it growing up. So I enjoyed that. But then we had an English language class, which I made sure I always missed, because the English language class was taught to us in Hindi. It was like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
But that's how it usually happens. Like, even in my school, the English lecture invariably became Gujarati midway.
Yeah, which is, because if you go for, and I tried to do, I did like my level one of Alliance Francaise, and I remember they have, every language class has one rule, which is that in this class, you only speak in that
this
language.
Yeah.
And the whole class was in Hindi. I was teaching English language. It was silly. So that's why, I mean.
It's the most difficult name I've ever come across. Alliance Francaise.
Alliance
Francaise?
Yeah. I just call it many different names every day.
The beauty of it is that you can say it any way you like, and it's all okay because it's India.
Alligator Frankenstein.
Alliance Francis.
Alligator Frankenstein.
Yeah. Allegiant Francisco.
Alibag.
All of it works, guys.
French land.
But yeah, and you know, so because of like things like that, I just ended up not going to college, and I just spent all my time in the radio. I learned a lot of stuff over there. That's where I feel like a lot of the answers to what I do right now in life, like, you know, there's few clues that are sprinkled throughout my life. There's a reason why I'm a singer-songwriter is because, you know, when I was in school, really protective of this secret of mine, you know, and I think a lot of kids go through that where, you know, if your parents are having trouble or they're fighting or, you know, they're separated, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to, like, it's like the biggest, darkest secret of your life.
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk about it to anybody until it started affecting my friendships and in like a relationship I had with a girl. And weirdly enough, that became the reason why I have to tell people, because I was like, oh, this girl, I can't explain to her that I need to keep my parents away from each other. I need to tell her. And so finally, when I told my friends that this is, I can't even imagine. It's not like coming out, but it was like telling one of your biggest secrets ever in your life, that your family's a mess, and it's like, you know, it's an embarrassment almost. And it started a chain of events which I hold dear to me in my life now, which is like, I love conversation. I love like really in-depth kind of, like when I like being very open about like how my life is, and I like to consider my life to be a fairly open book if people ask the right questions. And like, and so even with like my relationships with my friends, I don't know, it's like I feel like a lot of people have this kind of, not, I wouldn't call it superficial, they don't need to have a level of friendship of that length. But whenever I meet somebody who I really genuinely like, I dive in.
Absolutely.
I gotta know.
Exactly.
I make it my business to know, right? And I feel like even the reason why I became a singer-songwriter is like for a couple of reasons, man. It's like, one is because I used to have this kind of level of conversation which was super in-depth and really like meaningful.
Yeah.
And at the same time, K.A. Tansel was doing that kind of music, and I was like, hey, I don't have to be in a band. I don't have to kind of do metal music or do this or do that, even though I have potentially the chance to do that, and I can just do this type of music. And that kind of became this. Doing radio, you know, essentially kind of allowed me to develop this skill, like, which is like be able to
talk
and stuff. And so like it's weird how a lot of these pieces kind of just like form, you know, a larger kind of picture to what I do now. It's like basically the two things or two and a half things I told my parents asked me not to do as a kid is what I do for a living.
That's true, because like, even as comics, when we hang out with most comics, there's a sense of, there's a layer that people are just like, you know, there are people who just like crack jokes all the time to make up for what they can't put out vulnerability wise. Because the reason Akash and I first, as we all keep mentioning every time, like, the first thing we spoke about was depression and going through a mental breakdown,
absolutely.
And that's why we're still
together. Because both of us were in a bad place.
In a bad
place. It feels nice to not be as alone in that bad place.
And also, what is that with like, like comics
comedy,
and comedy
loves music.
Just that tragedy is such a strong part of it.
I think it's purely because I think humor first off comes off as a defense mechanism.
Yeah,
for most
absolutely.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
So
100%.
I mean, I got good at telling jokes. Like when I was a kid and I was chubby as hell, everyone made fun of me. I realized, oh, but what if my fat joke is better than yours? Now you can't make fun of me anymore.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's good.
So that's what happens.
Honestly, even now I feel like for whatever music I make, none of it makes it to my comedy.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like my music is nothing I can joke about. It's just the sappiest, saddest, deepest shit that I have to talk about. Like, I talk about, you know, heightened states of enlightenment during meditation. That's what I want to talk about in my music.
Right.
I can't talk about it in comedy.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think I have the craft level to discuss those things yet when it comes to my comedy. But with music, there's sincerity is almost expected.
It is. No, 100% it is. In fact, like, I will disclose this to you. I have done stand-up once in a while. I always feel like I've always wanted to do, like, I don't know if I've always wanted to do stand-up, but I always, for some reason, I've thought that, oh my God, I am going to be the shit. It's going to be nuts. I remember once, a very long time ago, when I was doing my show in Pune, the radio show and stuff, a very young Saurabh Pant and Kunal Rao came to the studio and stuff, and we did this 30 minute thing which I couldn't air at all because it was just rife
nasty.
With but it was so funny and it was great. And I remember Saurabh said, he was just like, you know, do you want to, you know, open, do like 5 minutes of comedy.
And that's how the first ever RJ opened for a comedy show he shouldn't have been opening for. That's where it started.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And you know what? I before, like, sometimes these opportunities come to me, and before my brain can, like, say no, I make sure my body just says yes and just, like, just say, yeah, I want to do it, because I don't know if I'll get this opportunity again. Mm. And so I went, wrote material and everything like that, and I went on stage, and I don't know what it is, and you guys can completely disagree, but this was like maybe 10 years ago. So it's not at all the scene that comedy is right now. But I went and I had these jokes, and like I bombed, like it was an insane mega done bomb. Okay, yeah. Like it was insane. But I always felt like, and my defense was like, you know what? I don't think at that point of time people want to see the star, right? They're not gonna use their laughs right now. They're gonna like nobody. I don't know if
wrong.
People. That's okay,
wrong,
yeah. I think now it may be different, but I think my jokes were great. Shall I get? Can I hit you with one of those jokes?
Go for it.
All right. it's stupid.
See, like how we're judging him now. It's like full circle.
I only remember maybe one or two things I said that night, because I've tried to black it out from my memory. I think I said, no, actually, this is not funny. You're right.
Go ahead.
I did say, I started off by saying, hey, you know, Saurabh and Kunal must be really nervous, because why else would you have an opening act for the opening act? But anyway, it was like, yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, thanks for, this is not American Idol, guys.
But low blow for a comic opening for is like a little dicey.
Why?
Because it doesn't always go in your favor. Yeah. The audience is there to see them. They'll be like, what the fuck, man? Why can't you just be nice?
Oh, because it's comedy?
No. Because people are like, we have this idol worship thing in India as a whole.
Yeah, oh yes, I know.
I can't even make fun of Ayurvedic doctors in this country.
You want
to make fun of the guy they come to watch?
You can make fun of whatever you want. It's just that you have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Oh man, you guys have. I'm so glad nobody understands what my songs are about. That's one of the best gifts I have. It's just like I can say whatever I want. People be like,
that's
music.
That's generally the beauty with music, right? I mean, the kind of things that people get away with in songs.
Yeah.
I mean, the same. If you had the same misogyny in comedy. Oh man, that person wouldn't last very long.
Oh, but I in my show now, my show now is like has like bits of stories and stuff in it. So it's a weird mix, like that I've been meaning to do, because I feel like a lot of what I do is talking, like with this podcast and you know and stuff like that. So I've always made my shows a little like you know spruced with that.
Yeah,
and there's a bit where I go on about stand-up comedians and how you guys suck.
Yeah, that's great.
I've seen that one.
Yeah, it's just...
I think that's great.
I just find it like it's a good jab because you guys have stolen our jobs.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. For sure.
Of course. Goes without saying.
Yeah.
And that's why comedians don't mind, because we still have those jobs we stole.
I know.
Yeah. So it's fine for us.
And
but that's the beauty of it, right? Like, I think that's really important. Like, every chance I get, I would love to shoot on poets.
Oh, God. Yeah, man. Once I went for a spoken word, like, thing, and I was the, like headlining
act
for a spoken one, and I was a singer songwriter, and I was just like, wow, I feel like so mainstream like right now compared to you guys, because like spoken everything is so intense
and
it's
so sad.
I mean, I get it, but it's just like really it's too hardcore.
Did you see Priya Malik's answer to Hardik Pandya?
Priya Malik has an answer to Hardik
already,
Pandya
already.
Already,
what's the answer?
In a while.
Yeah,
Isn't it been a while since he said whatever he said
it's been a week, so obviously it's an eternity.
So that's like six news cycles.
Yeah.
In today's day and age, dude. For 7 days, man.
Yeah.
But you know, here's my logic. I think
it's too much passion, dude. I'm just like done
all,
with passion.
No, I just feel like all the bad ideas, no, that we have, like whether it's sexism or whether it's just unlike full leftist, whatever, or whether it's right wing ideology.
It goes to poetry and becomes viral video.
It should be in art. Keep it in art. You know, let it be. I don't mind sexist art. I mind sexist policy maker. That's where it's a problem for me. I want the artist to be sexy. You be sexy. But like the guy casting the vote in parliament can't be sexist because his actions are way more far reaching.
But that's his electronic side project already. Like, like somebody is going to be doing something on the side. Oh God. Oh man.
But you had an entire album that was crowdfunded entirely.
Yeah. And
tell
you made
that.
Your goal in like some what, 7 minutes or something?
Not 7 minutes. No. But it was like 5-6 hours. Yeah, which was great.
Which is like 7 minutes in today's news cycle. Yeah.
You are obsessed. New cycle time.
But in news cycle time.
How old is your dog?
In news cycle time. Oh God. It was just really fortunate. I have what I feel like I've not had in family sometimes, I've had in friends. And like my entire support system is made up of really like quality friendships that I've had from a really long time, from school, etc. And all these people, I mean, my mother used to, you know, chide me with this a long time ago. She's like, you know, everybody wants to support an artist, you know, like everybody wants to put their money behind an artist because they're not doing it. It's not their career. Yeah. They're not sacrificing
That's
anything.
Not true at all.
Okay. So this is my mother, right?
It's an old time record.
Maybe.
It's exactly. Yeah. And so because everybody, like, because they don't have the courage to do it, so they back an artist. Like, you know, so because they're not worried about their career or their life, and you're the fool who's become the artist, you know.
You mean like monetarily or like in terms
monetarily, of... Monetarily, yeah, oh. Or like life or whatever, you know, okay. Like whatever, any performing artist lives so close to the edge of like,
but
you know, emotion.
Like, just to interject here, but I feel like I relate to this in some sense because my friends also really want to encourage me. But at the same time, as a working artist, you kind of realize that more often than not, they have no idea what they're talking about when they're trying to help.
Oh yeah, the one thing that I feel like has changed for me in the last like 10 years, or I suppose, of like playing music and things like that, is that, you know, I'm kind of done being like the project, you know, like everybody, you become like a project, right? Like everybody's like, oh man, you know what? This is what you need. Everyone's a manager. Everyone's a comedian. Everyone's like a really like an expert. It's like this whole like this Weekender thing, or you know, oh, artists should not play at Weekender, you know, like, and I'm just like, you know, get off your fucking high horse and like
stop watching like slam poetry.
And this, it was so funny because this year Weekender had almost equal parity for male and female.
No, it's
acts,
not just that. I mean, like, I feel like people who don't do the job, like, it's tough for them to understand what it is like right now in the scene. And I mean, I have like extremely complicated thoughts about it, but like, I don't think people understand like what it is to kind of be an artist in India as opposed to being an artist everywhere else in the world, right? It's like a saturated market. People have been doing it for like, there's about 100 years of pop culture or like performing art in most places of the world that have been cultivated and made. And this is such a uncharted kind of thing that we're going through right now, that there's no way you can say, oh, this is how it happened here, this is how, you can't put the same formula down. And for that reason, like, a lot of people say, oh, but you should do this, you should do that. And I was like, yeah, dude, of course I know I need a music video, or of course I know I need this or that or something.
Like, my childhood friends always like, do our video dal na. I'm like, okay, how do you think, what do you think I'm not doing?
Exactly, right? So my point is that I think that's one thing I've definitely, and I'm sure you guys have also kind of gone through that. It's like everybody's supporting you and you love that. And then after a while, that familiarity becomes like,
believing in you before you stop believing in yourself. Somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and they still they still back me. So to put my point across, which was this whole crowdfunding, this crowdfunding which happened in 6 hours. I mean, it happened because of like amazing people who have my back, and so I will always cherish that. It'll always be amazing to have, but it's something that comes at a price.
It does. It most
and
certainly
like
does.
Like my friendships with people, at least people who have paid for stuff for me, or you know, when I was broke, I've paid my rent or whatever it is, and I don't take any money from my parents. It's just like a policy because I know I'll never live it down in my life, right? Like that's just a thing.
Same here. Yeah.
But like people who have helped me, it alters that relationship. But almost similarly, in the way that choosing your passion alters the course of how you view that. You know, it's like, when I used to play songs just for myself, it's amazing and it was great, and it was a purity to it, which is now adulterated because it's my job. but it's a compromise I'm willing to have because I've traded it for like a following or people singing my songs. When I go to like fucking like Imphal or something and people are still singing the songs, I'm just like, yo, what's that about?
Yeah.
But sure,
that's
let's have
huge.
It. It's
yeah.
amazing. It's an amazing feeling. It's so, I'm so privileged and lucky to have it. But it is not without acknowledging that it comes at this kind of price, especially with your friends or any support system.
But I have the same feeling with comedy in the sense that because I have to pay bills, it'll always be jaded. But then I have the advantage of having music because then music is what I do for myself. Do you have an art form?
I have, I mean, so
you
I have Geek Fruit. And so I'll tell you this other thing which I recently did. So this album, Make It Happen, it came out end of 2017.
Yeah.
And I was so like fried with, you know, just having so much to do with it, you know, because the problem is like people say, oh, you know, you're, I spend such little time being an actual musician these days, right? Because like when you're on stage, people come up to you at the end of the gig and the people are like, man, I want to be a musician and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, dude, this is like maybe 10% of my life is being on stage and like playing, right?
Know that feel, bro.
90% of it is me sitting on my computer, sending emails and saying, please listen to my shit or like whatever.
Please clear this invoice.
Please clear this invoice.
Please give me my money.
Really, honestly. And that hard copy life.
God.
Anyway, so, you know, and to explain that to people is difficult. And oh man, I totally lost my point. But what was I saying? So that
you have this other thing.
Exactly. So I finished this thing with Make It Happen like a couple of years ago, and because I've spent so much time doing other things apart from music, I was really missing the joy of actually just creating something for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of 2017, I decided I want to start like a punk band, and we have like one rule, which is that anything that has, you know, we want to circumvent any problem that happens to a real band, which is like, oh, there's no fees for this gig. That means this band should not be operating around financial.
Yeah.
Or is like the music boring? Let's never play it again. So we have like few rules that we're trying to keep together. I don't know how long it'll last, but I started this punk band with like Dinkar and Arifa. Okay. So it's like,
okay, sweet.
Yeah. So it's like drums.
Very sweet people.
And amazing people, first off. And secondly, it's like, and we've played for like a year now where we just go into a studio and we just like jam and stuff and we've written all these songs. And it's just like so much freedom and so like, it's such a weight off your chest, you know, honestly, when you're just doing music and just having a good time. Something that I don't have all the time in my music. Yeah, those few moments where people are really like enjoying what I do. It's awesome, but you know how it is. It's such
a double-edged sword.
Yeah, of course, 100%. Yeah, yeah. But it's fine. It's okay. So I have that, and I have Geek Fruit.
Yeah.
And Geek Fruit is like now it's like in its third year, and we're still like so like happy that it's almost like therapy coming in every week and like just speaking to a microphone for like this
I
is
mean,
good for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
so much fun because I produced it for almost a year. Then.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost a year and a half actually.
Yeah.
And I would be on the sidelines mainly just watching them talk.
Yeah.
And sometimes join in as well. Because for the first 6 months I was like, you know what, I'm just the producer. And these guys are too cool, they're musicians and all of that.
That's my perception. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that shattered.
And just like I would be bursting at the seams. Like most of the podcasts I produced back then, like there was a lot of sleep induced in a lot of these conversations.
Yeah.
Like this one about this movies, I won't take the name. But it's so boring. But it was just like I live for Geek Fruit because there was so much dynamicity. Is that a word? But we had that going and
Dynamo all, what?
Dynamicity.
No?
Sure, why not?
Dynamicity.
Wrong. Poetic license.
You dynamic are fail.
My teachers never paid attention to
SSE.
Me. Yes.
Other keywords. Okay.
So, but yeah, I was always like, you know, very eager to jump in because it's nerdy, it's fun. And people usually have a lot of assumptions about nerds who are just like, you know, if you see a typical stereotypical...
What is a nerd and what is a cool kid changes a lot. As
yeah, like you have a retainer, you have glasses.
I know, the world has changed in the sense that it's we're cool now. Like we can, like when I was a kid talking about why kyber crystals make like what color of lightsaber and all that stuff, people would just be like, they just shut the fuck up, man.
At least that whole kyber crystal issue has been resolved now by the new canon at least.
Dude, and so now... Yeah. When we talk
now
about it and have a podcast,
guys.
sorry.
And when we have like a podcast and like what 200 episodes in, and people are still saying, "Oh, you can do this."
Yeah.
I'm just like, "Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah.
It's the coolest time in the world."
And I think that's one beautiful thing that's happened because of art. I think generally art does that. Like all the comics you meet, predominantly most of the comics you meet weren't the cool kids at school.
Yeah, yeah.
No, neither were the musicians.
Yeah.
Nor were the
No, I was pretty cool. I was pretty popular.
You're pretty popular. Yeah. Fuck you, man.
I was popular because I was like
They call you?
But were you muscular?
Yeah.
Spectacular?
No, that was. I wasn't.
Could you dance, Salah? That is the question.
I couldn't. I actually. So when I was growing up in school, I was an Elvis impersonator.
Uh-huh.
And
that kind? Or like
Elvis, not like Shahenshah. but yeah, so I used to do that, and because my mother made like she helped me make a Elvis suit, like the 70s Elvis. Yeah. So I'm a big something you'll never hear. On any other thing, I'm a huge Elvis nut. Like I'm a like insane obsessed Elvis obsessed fan. So when I was growing up, I learned all this stuff and I did all this. So once my mother said, "Why don't you put on the suit and go and do this in school?" And I did that, and my life changed basically because like all the older girls in school, they were like, "Oh my god, he's so cute," and all the young girls were like, "Damn," and you know whatever. But like. So that really helped me, but it became like a huge dichotomy because my teachers like absolutely despised me because they thought I was like focusing on things that will never amount to anything in life, Indian system, etc. Jokes on me still. But yeah, so when I was in school, I was popular, but I was pretty unpopular with teachers, and I was embarrassed in school. Like people used to like shout at me.
Do you think our teachers, like looking back now, were like, this kid is definitely not going to amount to much in a field of academics or whatever, but maybe he'll get his shit together? Like I know my teachers for sure, because in my diploma years I would like fuck around a lot but still come up on top. Like I was still one of the top grading kids.
Uh-huh.
And my teacher back then just called me like he called me Chatur or Silencer or something, I don't know. No, that's a bad guy. He called me Fungchuk Wangdu from 3 years because he was like, he also fucked around and then finally got good grades. But they knew that I would not pursue engineering. They were just like, "Tu nahi kar payega, you will just like be an entertainer," which is what I'm doing right now.
I hope there's been an awakening in like people and like teachers and stuff, academia at least.
Yeah. I can literally point out the three professors who are responsible for whatever I do right now in life.
Yeah, I can like, I can also boil it down to a few people.
Because I was literally between that space of... I was at the center of a lot of shit in school, but I was not necessarily liked for the fact that I was in the center of a lot of stuff in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of teachers really had it out for me. But I remember very distinctly, like my fourth grade history teacher, Falguni Miss, who doesn't listen to this, but we still hang out. We're still friends. We've become, like, I mean, it's more than that, I'd like to think. But, I remember literally...
Sorry, that was so good.
Her husband and her literally took me in after 10th standard. And they were like, "Okay, you know what? Your parents are never going to agree with what you want to do. So somebody needs to positively reinforce you."
Yeah. But what were they teaching? What did she teach you?
She taught me history in 4th. But so in 8th grade, no?
Yeah. Let's all call out our favorite teachers.
Yeah, and in 8th grade, Falguni Miss said, I was auditioning for some play where they wouldn't let me be in the play or something. And she literally, like, she grabbed me by the shoulders and said, "Listen, you know what? You need to not listen to anybody ever in your life."
Amazing.
And if she hadn't told me that, I wouldn't be here right now. Yeah, like, I wouldn't have done any of it. Her and literally, it's like 2-3 teachers.
I feel like there's very similar stories, like, you know, that happen. I feel like amongst people, I'd say like us, because we're in like this, so to speak, creative field and all. Like, there's that space is just so not carved out for us in the past, at least like in the 90s or 80s for kids like us.
Yeah.
That all of us have had like maybe like one or two people who are super so instrumental.
Yeah.
I have like two teachers who were both my music teachers, Sharon and Axel. And so the cool thing was when I went to play finally in Dubai, I went back home after like 10 years. It was like fucking like waking up, like it was like, you know, like at the end of Avengers or first Avenger when like Captain America wakes up like
and
after
he's
like
in New York, in
it's
Times
like
Square,
it was so different going back home. And it was great. I met all my teachers and everything like that. And it was good to shove it in some of their faces. But like, for these two, they came for my show. And that was like, that was special. Yeah, it was great. It was great to kind of show them, saying like, "You guys bet on the right horse."
Yeah.
It was not that poor a decision.
Yeah, it feels, it's like this weird kind of, you know, that pride feel like, "Hey, I hope you're proud of me now." Like,
yeah,
you know,
I know, yeah.
Which you can't really do with your parents. So you can do it with them. And it's just a different kind of special feeling.
Like my teachers from school have tracked me down on Facebook. And like, you know, once in a while, if an article randomly appears, they're like, "Hey, we read this."
Yeah, and
I'm so happy. Because like for me back then, English were like my 7th standard teacher, Kanchan Deshpande, is one of the main reasons why I picked up language and understood grammar better, or just spoke publicly better.
Yeah.
Because I was a coy kid, would not talk much. And because we had this whole East-West bifurcation in our school.
Yeah. Okay.
So they would treat the East kids worse than the best
kids.
So if it was like a class reading or something, we would like hardly picked up. But
West Side Story,
totally East Side Story. We're the underdogs. But she would like, you know, encourage me to come forward and read in the class and everything. And I had this horrible habit of, you know, cracking my knuckles all the time. She would tell me not to do it. So years later, when I see her now at around the station or whatever, she's like, you know, I'm so happy that you're following what you want to do. And these things matter, I feel. It's like one word of encouragement when your parents are just being...
Man, you don't know where that drop becomes an ocean. Exactly. Like, it's nuts. It's that Rory Gilmore vibe. Sorry, it's like a...
No, it's totally cool. And that's such a wonderful sentiment to kind of end today. We've been ending these episodes on great vibes, if you've noticed.
Because we're learning as people.
We're learning as people.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this out there, this is pretty much at the end of this episode. And if you're listening to this, man, I hope you had a good time listening to our stories over the last 2 years or your whatever, man. I just hope you have good time listening to stories, man. And thank you so much for coming on this
dude stage. Thank you so much. This was good like therapy,
good feelings,
good vibes.
Catharsis,
absolutely.
So, and we're always here, we'll always keep telling stories. If you want us back for season 3, do write to IVM because we'll make it work. We're all traveling and working on so many
projects. I think the only reason we've taken an off is because we've been, both of us, Naveen and I, have been a little what's it called? Fucking famous. That's what, motherfuckers. I'm sorry. We've been just busy and running around. That peak, I hope it doesn't peak. If it does peak, then I hope it conveys just how famous we've become.
Exactly.
But you can measure your fame decibel wise.
I think Taylor Swift will now have sex with me. Because I made that bitch famous. Sorry. You can catch Tejas Menon online. He's Tejas everywhere.
Yeah, it's his Tejas though. Yeah. Menon is like my family name.
Dark Nam.
Menon. I keep telling this to every single email that I have to send for my label and stuff, saying that please make sure the communication is always Tejas and not Tejas Menon. Yeah. It's only because it's just easier, and I'm like a big Madonna fan, and I just like the one name kind of thing.
Will you eventually become the artist formerly known as Tejas?
I can't. That's another good thing about me naming my band Tejas, is that I can't really quit Tejas. It's also kind of a good encouragement.
Yeah,
awesome.
But yeah.
Akash is Kuji Mehta and not Kuji Mehta sometimes.
And Naveen is the House of Norona.
Yes.
On all the social media platforms.
And if you like this podcast, there's a lot more on the IVM network. Check out IVM Podcast app or the website. And you can follow them on IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram.
Until then,
wise men say only fools ration. But I can't help falling in love with you, 'cause I can't help falling in love with you.
Is that a deliberate Elvis Presley? Sorry.
Yeah.